hey, are you trying to recover and maybe even fall pregnant naturally? I thought that might be you. And if so, we have created our best ever yet resource for you. Totally free. This is a masterclass. I've called it my masterclass because I have put everything into this, right? This masterclass is designed for you if you have HA or have had HA and are dealing with suboptimal cycles and you're serious about restoring those babies to full optimization and you want to create the ideal foundation for a pregnancy. This is going to be for you. So in this masterclass, I'm going to provide you a lot of things, including a lot of case studies, mine, Ashley's and Mishi's, as well as lots of our past clients and what their challenges were and what they had to do to overcome it. And we cover a really wide variety of types of cases of HA. So everything from primary amenorrhea and missing periods for years and years to short-term amenorrhea and what we did to handle that situation as well, and how long it took these people to go from HA to pregnant with this system, and how long it took them to go from HA to ovulating, of course, with this system. So lots of information, lots of case studies, lots of stats. We go through why this is not a weight gain plan and how we actually divide you into phases, the three phases of HA, and determine what your starting point is so that you have a good idea of where you need to start with your actual changes in lifestyle and nutrition changes. We even cover questions like HA and people with a normal BMI and recovery for people who have had HA for too long. There's so much in this 60-minute masterclass. Y'all, I'm impressed. And at the end, I'll also be running you through how to get a free HTMA, hair tissue mineral analysis through us, which is a part of our process for recovery and preconception clients that we're happily going to give you for free $99 as a massive thank you, of course, for joining the masterclass. So go to thehasociety.com/masterclass or head to our website and you'll find a link for it and find when the next available presentation is going to be. That's thehasociety.com/masterclass. Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sharif, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician.
Hallo, hier ist Theresa und du hörst den Hypothalamische Amenorrhoe Podcast.
It was beautiful. I love it. Okay. Welcome everybody to the HA podcast. I am joined here by Teresa. She's from Germany. And she worked with Ashley. So I'm kind of really, while we've met in community calls in the HA Society and everything, I'm with you guys here kind of hearing her story from the beginning for the first time. So I'm just kind of excited to dive right in, honestly, and find out what this story is. And then just like, ask you all kinds of questions. So would you do me a favor and kind of tell people a little bit about you, your beginnings, and kind of where you think your story begins? And welcome and thank you for being here.
Yeah. I'm very grateful to be here. I reflected on that question today and I was like, this is so difficult to answer, like where it truly began. Because for me, I think it really like it's so multifactorial, right? There's not one beginning where it all started. And I think for me, it really started actually with like birth, because I feel like I'm exploring in trauma therapy right now, like the roots of a lot of problems that I'm facing in my life. And I'm working as a trauma therapist, or I'm training in somatic experiencing, which is a somatic therapy. And I think when I was born, there might have been something that was very like overwhelming for me, and it left like some traces. And after that, I was left with that feeling of having to hold myself together. And that showed up in a lot of physical symptoms already as an infant. And I think then I was raised in a family system that also didn't feel safe to me. So that feeling of I have to keep myself together was reinforced. So I feel like my whole identity was around kind of trying to pull myself together, keeping it all together. And I was doing lots of sports. I think my sympathetic nervous system was highly activated throughout my whole childhood. I wasn't able to sleep or sit still or relax. I was constantly moving. And I think my whole identity was, yeah, around being active, sportive, focused, disciplined. I felt kind of like this fighter, you know, this fight and flight mode became my identity. So I didn't know anything beyond, like, beside that. And just feeling relaxed and calm wasn't really something that I've experienced. And I think that might have also been the reason why my puberty onset was so late. So I was like 3 years behind with everything. So I only got my first period by the age of 16 and a half, which is really late, right? And then I think the most important factor that really influenced me was my dancing career. So I was in normal high school, but then decided to pursue a kind of semi-professional dance career and changed high schools to do dance as an A-level subject. And then I was training every day and my whole world was dancing. And my whole, like, my friends were all dancers. And it was, on the one hand, a really wonderful time. We were very close. We were very connected. But it was also highly competitive. And I think the dance teachers had a huge influence on me in that time of being 15, 16, 17, because they were really messing with our minds, right? People that were in larger bodies were just ignored or, like, kind of bullied. Most of my dance teachers had eating disorders. And they were kind of saying, oh, you're not allowed to eat fries. If we see you with fries, you're being punished. Then one teacher was saying, oh, like, if you don't eat, you don't have your period. This is super cool. You basically can control your body. You know, it's like, if you are growing up in that environment, like, you just feel like, okay, this is it. This is, like, what you orient towards. And at that point, I wasn't really struggling with an eating disorder. But then my best friend who I've lived with at that point started, yeah, developing an eating disorder. And because I was so competitive, I was like, oh, if she doesn't eat, I can't eat, right? Because we were kind of like competing in all areas of our lives. And I was feeling like, if I'm eating while she's not eating, that means I'm weak in some way, right? Yeah. So that is the reason how my eating disorder actually started. That I was always so focused on what people around me were doing and trying to find some orientation, what was good or bad. I wasn't listening to my own body at all. And I think my childhood, the experiences I've made in my childhood, plus the experience as a dancer, where constantly being told, ignore anything your body tells you, basically, right? You have blisters and your feet are bleeding and you're being told to go on point shoes and dance for an hour. You know, you're being sick, you have fever, and they just give you painkillers to continue with training. And you're basically cut off some part of your body. And it's becoming like it's being appreciated if you're being hard on yourself. And that has worth and value. And I think that definitely influenced me a lot. So that was the one side. But the other side then was when I, when my best friend developed the eating disorder was just at the end of high school. And then my whole dance class, we went into different cities to study dance. And I actually went to Frankfurt and my best friend to Rotterdam. So we were apart from each other. Mm-hmm. But I somehow like kept that pattern with me. And I think what happened then was what really was the onset of my like kind of like more severe like dysfunctional eating behavior was that I was in Frankfurt and suddenly I felt so lost and alone. And so I actually think I was pretty depressed. I was away from my family, from my friends. And I think I was feeling so lonely, and that feeling that I had from childhood where I didn't feel like I have a lot of inner core or substance to me. It's very difficult to verbalize that. But I basically feel there's this, like, I don't know, there's just nothingness inside of me and I needed to hold on to something, right? That's how I started with like this feeling I need to hold on to something. And that became kind of like structuring my eating. And then I just ate less than my body required, and training 10 hours a day and not eating is not a good combination. So yeah, I lost a lot of weight in a short amount of time. And I changed schools, and my mom was saying, I'm going to take you from like dance school. You're not allowed to continue dancing. And I felt very misunderstood because I was suffering. I wasn't understanding myself, like what was going on. So I felt really lost, right? Like I just didn't know what was happening. And it seemed like that was the only reason, the only strategy I could come up with to somehow feel like I have some control and like I have something to hold on to. And I somehow managed to get out of it, at least the extreme phase. But I mean, the disordered eating kept, like I kept it with me for 10 years. So to give some more details on my period, I had my period with 16 and a half, where I was already dancing quite a lot. And then I had it for maybe like, I don't know, a year, like irregularly. And then I got onto the pill. And while I was heading towards that more severe eating disorder, losing a lot of weight, I had the pill. I didn't know what was happening. And then at some point with, I think then I was 19, I decided to stop dancing and pursue a different path. And I was like, okay, I have a new outlook. I think I want to heal myself in order to heal others. That was kind of like a moment where my whole life changed. And that became like kind of my guide. And I stopped dancing. And instead I went to Thailand and did meditation retreats and so on. But in that time I stopped taking the pill. And because I was like, maybe I'm depressed because of the pill, right? Or I'm feeling so low energy and not like myself, like a shadow of myself really. And I stopped taking the pill and my period didn't come back. And I was like, okay. So I waited 6 months. I was like, okay, can take some time. But then what happened was that my hair was falling out and I got acne and I was feeling miserable. And I really was so overwhelmed because that was again triggering this feeling like I'm falling apart, right? Like my hair is falling out. It was really difficult to deal with. And then I found a gynecologist who said, cool, not cool, but like I have an idea. Why don't you take bioidentical hormones? And this will stabilize you for some time. And then we make sure that your body feels safe enough to have a period or like to get a menstrual cycle again. But then that became the crutches and I just continued walking with them for like 8 years.
So interestingly, the bioidentical stuff has been only common, something I'm hearing about really commonly more recently. So that's interesting. You did that a while ago. Were you doing like 2 weeks estrogen, 2 weeks progesterone? Like what did that look like?
No, I think I did. I started with, I think 21 days estrogen and the last 12 days progesterone and then a break of 7 days where I did have a bleed, a withdrawal bleed. Okay. So I did it that way. And then I tried to reduce it, but my symptoms.
And you were never on birth control.
I was only on birth control between the age of 17 and 19.
So at this time of taking the bioidentical, that's only medication you were taking hormone-wise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just always curious, like what concoctions people are working with. So, okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But then I was basically taking bioidentical hormones for 8 years.
Yeah.
And I was trying to stop, but then the symptoms would reoccur and I couldn't deal with it. And then I went back on it. And that kind of went on for 8 years. And I was feeling like, I'm fine. Like, I don't have an eating disorder anymore, because I didn't struggle with eating that much, but I was just like, had a lower BMI and was just feeling fit, you know? And I don't know, I was feeling good in my body. And then, well, I was not feeling great in my body, to be honest. Like, I think that
you were feeling great about what it looked like on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the thing is, because I was always like, I was a child and then I was dancing. And then I don't know, I'd never had a time where I didn't have a skinny, fit looking body, right? So like, that was all I knew, like, as to how I can look. And I thought, that is just me. And I didn't consider that maybe I would have looked differently if my body would have been in different conditions, right? Or I would have given it the food that my body requires. And then I had a lot of symptoms all along the way, though. Like, for example, Raynaud's syndrome. Like, I love my partner is from South Africa, and we spent a lot of time in Cape Town during COVID. I just love surfing, but I couldn't, because my blood flow was so bad, and like, my hands, like my fingers would get completely white, and my toes, and like, I was, yeah, there
this
were a lot
good
of things.
Symptom to touch on. It's actually comes up a lot, of course, you know, in the form of someone being like, yeah, I have Raynaud's, or just saying I have very poor circulation. So for anyone wondering, it's pretty much what it is, right?
Yeah.
Raynaud's syndrome is like poor circulation. And something that I think I've picked up on for people, I don't know how true this is, but my impression of this has been like, oh, you just have this. And that's why that happens. So don't worry about it. And I'm like, no, you have that. That's like a symptom, not a syndrome, in my personal opinion. And so saying it's a syndrome is like giving people permission to just be like, well, that's just me. When I have never seen it not resolve in someone once they get fully recovered, or at least improve significantly. So just for anyone out there.
Let me tell you already, it did improve.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
You know, so I'm like fascinated, really. And I think there was also a point where I was feeling so weak. So I also must say, I was vegan for a long time. So between the age of 19 and 24, kind of, I was mainly vegan. And my body was just so weak. Like, I would try to get up from bed, and I just fell. Like, and then I did all the checkups, and I constantly had like iron deficiency, vitamin B12 deficiency, like, I've had all kinds of deficiencies. And while we were in Cape Town, my boyfriend was like, Teresa, I think you need to change something. Why don't you start eating some biltong, which is like the dried meat from South Africa, and let's get a fish from the harbor. I think you need to like increase your protein intake. At that point, I was like, nah, like, I don't think it's the protein. And now, like, after taking the coaching, I was like, maybe he was right.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so actually, that from that point, it still took me like 1.5 years, and I'd never gotten a diagnosis, right? I didn't have a period for 10 years. No one ever told me it's hypothalamic amenorrhea. And then when I was surfing in Biarritz, actually, I found your podcast, and I listened to it actually on my way back to Germany, and I listened to an episode, and I was like, shit, this is me. And I
was it
crying.
Like
I was
another person's story?
I'm not sure. I think it was just like, I just remember you talking, and maybe your story or someone else's story. I'm not sure, but I just realized, yeah, this is me, and I think I need to gain weight. And it was like, there was like a moment of like deep grief, I think, or like sadness, where I was like, I can't continue like this, and something needs to change. And that was really some like the start of the HA healing journey for me. Yeah.
Wow.
But then it's still a long time.
say a little more about the grief, right? Like, grief, like, oh, I'm going to have, you know, I think a lot of us maybe even that, even if there's just a part deep down inside of us that already has that intuition, yeah. you know what I mean? Yeah. And you're just like trying everything you can to stuff yeah. it down and be like, no, yeah. maybe I'll try this and I'll try that. And then you get to a point where like something happens, or tried everything, or someone says something that connects, or all of the above. And you're just like, oh, like this is what has to happen. And suddenly the world, it's like this whole life you had, where like flashes before your eyes of like constantly controlling your body. I am good if I do this. This is actually the goal. There is no excuses for not achieving the goal. If you don't, you know, if you do gain weight, you're a bad person, blah, blah, blah. All that like flashes into your mind yeah. and you, it's almost like you've just been dumped in cold water and you're like, whoa, yeah. I'm awake to everything that just happened. And you had said something earlier of like, I forget the words you used, but like you were kind of like lacking a true like inner core of who you are yeah. and yourself. And it's
yeah.
I feel like that's all intricately connected of like when you're grieving and you're realizing like this whole time you've been kind of in robot land. Like, let's be yeah. real, that yeah. the true version of yourself has been missing a little bit, or like stifled. And yeah. I have to imagine that the grief and that moment of realization is like a transition point into this 100%. Next phase.
100%. And actually that grief, it kind of felt like something cracked open, you know? Mm. And yeah, that was really, I think, the start of something like much from a place much deeper, like starting to reveal itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the grief, I've had it, it comes in waves. It's still coming. So, for example, maybe just to go back to like the most recent moment of grief that I had, because I was in Cape Town again for holidays, and I did go back to how we lived basically most of the time when I was still in HA. And we were just like surfing in the morning, going on a hike, playing beach volleyball. And I was like, oh, cool. I had like 2 cycles. Like, let me just enjoy my holiday and, you know, yeah. go for it. And yes, I tried to eat before I went surfing, try to eat something in the morning, but just little, because I was like, it's so early. Like, I don't have time yeah. to eat, right? Like, I just want to go surfing. The waves are so good. And then I had no ovulation in the month. And I came home and I was like,
were you with Ashley at that point, or had you done your own recovery at that point?
I had just finished my coaching with Ashley.
Okay.
So
okay,
I had
okay.
2 cycles. So it was great because my period came back after 3 weeks of working with Ashley after 10 years, which was like a miracle for me, really. And I had ovulated in the second cycle, like with a very short luteal phase, 1 of 3 and 1 of 6 days. So really it's not perfect yet. But then I was like, oh no, like, I didn't ovulate at all this month. It was too much. And I realized I cannot go back to doing that much sport, not resting, and trying to be the skinny version of myself. It's just like an equation that doesn't work. Like, it's not gonna, I can't go back. Like, I yeah. will, if I wanna do sports as much as I like, and I don't know, do that for the next 70 years, hopefully, I need to prioritize maintaining my weight, resting, and fueling myself enough. But that means that I cannot look like I want to look, right, like before. And I just felt like it really felt like I need to let go of that old part and that hope that I had maintained, that after the coaching I could just go back, you know, that yes, I have my period back and now everything's fine, great, and now I can go back to the old life that I've had and look the same. And I've had this realization, and it was, this moment of grief was so deep that I was like, it really felt like this old part of myself is dying, and I kind of really need to understand that this is over and I cannot go back. And even now talking about it, it makes me feel sad. So these waves of sadness, they're still coming, but I feel like
yeah.
I have more space to just hold them compassionately. Yeah.
And I think it's like also a part of, it's kind of a part of being alive, isn't it? Of being like sacrifice, can't have that, but like, you know, making choices for making choices more in the direction of making you happy instead of in the direction of like keeping you in everybody else's good graces. And just like always asking yourself, where is this desire coming from? Is it moving me towards what I want, or do I need to sacrifice it or say no to it, you know, in order to be happy? And I think that like we will always experience that. And like, as well, anyone who's gotten cycles back before and lost them can probably relate to, you know, my weight ebbs and flows quite a lot throughout the year. I mean, it's just like everyone in my life's birthday is like at the end or beginning of the year. And since so is Christmas and so is Thanksgiving. So I always like gain weight at that time. By the end of the year, I've lost weight because there's nothing going on in my life. And then it's back into that time frame, right? It's back into that like Christmas period. And now I'm all about like, I understand the ebb and flow. So I don't really like panic at weight gain because I know the pattern, right? I'm like, you know, but also like, especially in the early days, you're like, I mean, I had my period and I was able to like lose some weight, and now I've gained weight again and I'm panicking again, even though I've been through this, or like I'm sad again, even though I've been through this, or like, I just want to surf. You know what I mean? So like, I'm super similar, but with pickleball. I just want to play pickleball. Like, I just want to get up in the morning and I just want to go and I ain't got no time for this breakfast nonsense. Right. But the more I do it, the next cycle, my period is always lighter, right? My luteal phase is always a day or two shorter. Like, mine is so easily affected. Right. And when I go on vacation or when I go through that Christmas time and I have just gained that weight and stuff, like my cycle is always better. So it's, you're always starting to connect these dots now of like, okay, well, when I have all this fun, things are less optimal. Like when I have all this, you know, sports fun and I kind of like put my good behaviors that like help me get an optimal cycle, when I put them on the back burner, this is what happens. And when I relax and have fun and eat and have joy and enjoy life, things tend to get better. And I've connected those dots. And now they're not particularly emotional for me, but once upon a time they were. And it was constant frustration and grieving. But now it's like, okay, fine. Like, I'll just start eating more breakfast, right? I'll just do what I've learned has worked. I will fix the problem. But it takes a long time to get there. And you need to keep making mistakes to learn patterns and connect dots and to eventually feel less emotional and less grief about it, because it's actually, you can fix it, you know, but we just panic. Hey, do you know what your blind spots are? As in, do you know what it is, what the thing is that is holding you back from getting your period back? Look, it could be an absolute plethora, cornucopia of things, but in our practice, the first place we tend to go is, what behaviors and habits do you have around food that you may be still doing? And these are called blind spots because we just don't necessarily always know that they're an unhelpful habit or that it's something that we're doing, whether it be a subconscious or conscious need to control our food or our body, or whether it be something that you've just done for so long that it feels normal and like a preference even. We have created a checklist. It's a 3-page checklist that goes through food types, behaviors around food, and mindsets around food. And what you do is you go through the lists and you check off and you see which ones are you doing, whether it be daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and how are they potentially affecting your recovery today. So it's a really simple checklist. It's just 3 pages. You go through it. There's a very simple scoring system to help you figure out how much this may be impacting your recovery. And it's just an insightful thing for you to do to help you reflect, and then you can journal about it or you can learn more about it and just start really working at any of the boxes that you checked and understanding that they're playing a role in your recovery. So to get the checklist, all you have to do is go to thehasociety.com/blindspot and we'll send it straight through to you. You can print it off and you can check on it every now and then. I always recommend a reflection point every 4 to 6 weeks. How are you going? Are you still checking that behavior off, or have you, you know, systematically kicked it to the curb? So check it out. It's thehasociety.com/blindspot and it will be waiting for you there.
Yeah. And I think I really needed this to just realize, or motivate myself to continue this journey. I think if my body wouldn't have responded that way, I might have actually went down that rabbit hole again of being like, cool, I'm going to work out, I'm going to become fit again. Like, as if that would make me really happy, you know? As if that would make me, I don't know, more worthy or more appreciated by others. And I think I really am on that path of finding that balance, because I just really truly love movement. I've been a dancer, I love surfing, I love outdoor sports, right? I just do it because I really enjoy moving my body. But I want to do that until I'm 90 years old. I want to be on my surfboard and I want to be able to surf. And I already got the diagnosis osteopenia. So that was actually also the reason why I decided to go for the coaching, because I was like,
wake up,
I read something. That was the kind of second, very crucial moment, which was a huge wake up call for me. And yeah, so I'm still on my journey, but I feel like sometimes I lose track of what my true goals are, but then I realign and I can feel in my body that I'm more aligned and connected to myself when I'm on that path.
I love that. Yeah, it's so you cannot just fully heal from this in 3 weeks.
No.
You can get a period in 3 weeks, sure, but I mean, you got to go through the first year, the first couple years, you got to go through it. And it is so beautiful on the other side, because it almost releases you from having such high expectations. Yeah. You're like, you know what? You just can't. You just can't do everything to the highest level. Something's got to give, and you need to choose happiness. And when you have those, I feel like it makes decision-making easier. Right? Because now you start making decisions in line with longevity, like you're saying, right? You want to surf till you're 90, right? Okay, well, what decisions are you going to make for longevity instead of, because you're not going to surf till you're 90 starving yourself, end of story, right?
Exactly.
So now it's clear cut for you. And I love that.
Yeah. And I think the challenges that I'm facing is really because I'm still my mind is still comparing so much, right? And also trying to understand what's right and wrong. And if I'm surrounded by people that have that idea that it's healthy to wake up, do sports, not eat, have, I don't know, sugar-free breakfast, after 12, it just sucks me into it. And I feel oh no, I need to compete with that. And it's really difficult for me to be clear, okay, this is not what I have chosen for my life and I want something else. And just staying with, you know, what feels true to me. I think this is something, that is still sometimes very challenging for me. And sometimes I just want to shake all these people and just tell them, this is not healthy.
This is why community is important, right? Even if it's just your partner being clued in, but having, you coming to the group calls and stuff and, remembering that it's not just you doing this and then everyone else out in the world is doing the opposite. 100%. And so you need to compete. It's like, no, me and my girls over here are taking this path.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Like, yeah. I've got backup. Yeah. But yeah. Also, it's just the reps, right? Like, I think the more you see someone else do something and decide to do what's best for you, like, that's great for them. Great for them that they're doing whatever they're doing, even though you kind of want to shake them. What the F ever? You know, the more you choose yourself, the easier it becomes, right? Because nothing bad happens. Yeah. It's like kind of freeing.
Yeah. And like what I've also reflected on was that I'm, because my whole identity was around being very sportive, being the fit one, and being very disciplined, like being like very disciplined in school, like in all parts of life in a way. Now I'm like, oh, what will people think if they see me and I'm in a bigger body, right? They will say, oh, she let herself go. And somehow that is something that I'm still struggling with. That idea that some people could think, oh, she kind of like, I don't know, is letting herself go, right? And I'm still trying to understand why that is so important to me. I haven't figured it out yet.
No, I resonate with that too. And the only thing that I can, you know, really say for absolutely everybody in for it is, like, you know, from a very young age, it was associated with it, like, it was everything. You know, when you're younger, your first breakup is the most painful of all of them, right? Like, it's just like so much rejection. Everything is just so much more intense when you're younger, which really just is so important for our long-term development, unfortunately. So when things happen, that is the most ingrained. That thing is hardwired, right? So we see the opinions of others. And I think a lot of people struggle with, like, people you went to high school with who you have literally not seen in 20 years. And, like, it just, like, the most unimportant people in your past ever. But it's because it was such an important time for our development, and it's where we learned our comparison. And I bet you a lot of it too is, like, how would the girls who I danced with when I was younger see me now? Because you hear women who are like, I'm a lifelong dancer, so my body is, like, you know, super important to me, like all of that stuff. And when people look at you and say they've let go, you're going, you know, the fear is you're going to be rejected and you're going to be moved down the totem pole of importance and value. And I really, honest to gosh, just think, because it's totally illogical, just think that as a human species, as an animal, acceptance is food, safety, hunger, community. And so just on a primal level, we're like, I will literally be banished.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's not only the fear of being rejected. I don't even think that I have that so much. It's really more, I think, that idea that I somehow have to stand out.
Yeah,
and for me, that was always achievement, like be the best, really, because that defines me. And if I'm not standing out, I will just go down in the crowd. Like, no one will actually see me. So I won't even be discovered as a being. So then it becomes something that is very existential, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, who am I? And like it's something that's very, like, difficult to describe with words.
If I'm not special, what am I? Why am I here? Am I just a background character in everyone else's life? Like, I've had those exact feelings.
It's like I'm basically just a drop of water in this ocean, but, like, what defines me? Like, what is making me? Like, I need to be that wave, you know, in order to be something. Like, and then, like, then it can get deep. Then I feel very disoriented, and then I'm like, but, like,
I mean, well, what's fucked up as women is just how many of us have felt like, well, if I can just be the hottest person in the room, I'm 80% of the way there. And then I just need to also be, you know, everything else on top. And I think that's what's really sad, right? It's like, so because I had that experience, and I pursued everything with this belief of like, when I have the perfect body, everything will come, right? All the things that come to people who are special, right, will come. And that was not happening. You know what I mean? Like, it, in fact, it was just getting worse because I was like a moody cow that no one wanted to be friends with. And when I made this switch and was just like, I'm going to let go of my body and I'm going to try and focus maybe on other things and other people, right?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I'm getting that fulfillment. I feel like I'm getting that specialness. Yeah. Like when I get a message from someone that's like, your podcast was helpful.
Mm.
I'm like, well, fuck yeah. Because no one was saying thank you to me.
Yeah.
No one was saying thank you to me when I had abs. They weren't like, oh my gosh, I never even had abs. But like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for your body.
I know. But like, no one is being like, oh, I love you so much because your grades are good. Like, no, people are
no,
like,
they don't. Yes, exactly.
And I don't know, like, yeah, but still, that was like, so, like my whole life, it was about like kind of standing out and like fighting and defining myself through, I don't know, performance and achievements. And now it's really this whole new path of who am I and who do I want to be. And I think for me, that started with that really like clear voice in my head saying like, heal yourself in order to heal others. So I can really like integrate that like HA healing journey into that framework of like healing myself in order to heal others. And yeah, I think it really brings me back to this. I don't know, for me now my identity is more that like moment by moment unfolding something, right? And it's more a journey of discovery rather than like definition, you know. It's
like,
not
you don't even need
up.
The answer, like, what if you're just like, I have no identity.
Exactly. It's not a top down like defined thing. I'm not a thing. Like, I'm an unfolding process, an ever-changing unfolding process, and that is my identity, and that is scary.
but this is
where you truly lie.
I think the only thing that we're truly able to say, like, you know, this is perpetual for me, is like your values. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like your values, your goals. You're like, I want to surf till I'm 90. I want longevity. Like, I value these things. These are the things that I value. But me as a person, like, y'all, this is complex. There's a lot of things I'm into. And for me, even like, you know, I tell this story that I was once going to training with some, like a friend who I was visiting, who was also a weightlifter. And on our way there, she was like, so like, what else do you like to do? And I didn't have an answer for her. It's just like, just this, you know? And now I have so many things going on. Like, I sometimes think I need to cull them. Like, I'm completely renovate my own house, just like in between meetings. And, and you know, I do this for work, but sometimes I'm so distracted by like my renovation project, or sometimes I get really into pickleball and like, that's all I want to do that weekend. Like, I'm kind of distracted from work, or sometimes work's taking over. And so I don't even leave the house. And it's just like, every week is different. So there is no, and sometimes I'm like, no, imagine if you sat and focused and you were like, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm going to build this business and I'm going to put in everything. Like, you know, I'm like, that could be my identity. And like, if I just did that one thing, I could be so good. But I'll also apply that to that. Like, right. Like, you know, if you just put everything into the house, like, it could be so amazing. Or if you just put everything into your sport, you could. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I love bebopping around and doing whatever I freaking feel like. At the time.
But that requires you to be in contact with your body and noticing what your body actually wants you to do, right? And I think that is something that I start to develop now more and more, is to actually be in touch with myself. Something that I've kind of cut off. Although I was a dancer, I was obviously in contact with my body, but in a way that wasn't really about my more like my felt sense, my inner feelings. So yeah, it's really about like noticing what is, where do I feel aligned, right? Also with your values, what really resonates with me? Where do I feel like, yes, this is, you know, where I feel a sense of expansion or aliveness coming through. So sometimes I experience myself as this like, I don't know, channel or like vessel where I just feel like something is like kind of like being expressed through me. And then I feel like this is where I know I'm at the right place. Yeah. And this is something I have that when I'm surfing, you know, it's just like my, this like unity with like nature and like your body on that surfboard, or when I'm singing, or when I'm doing therapy with people and I just feel like I have these, like ideas just arising in that conversation on like what intervention to do, or just like, listening to a friend and just being truly in the here and now. So yeah, that is my unfolding identity.
This is great. This has been a really wonderful conversation about, you know, having such deep rooted shit and going in like reluctantly changing it with like fear and getting out on the other side and being like, yeah, I can see that this is worth pursuing. And I know that this is like a long-term, this is long-term what I want to do. And I'm happier. Like, that's just like such a great, that's what everyone wants. It's not about the weight gain. It's not about the baby. It's about happiness. Right.
Yeah.
I think that that's great.
And just like something that I've realized as a therapist, I think psychotherapy should basically incorporate like looking at hormones much more. Because I feel like we are always coming with that idea, oh, it's probably something that happened in childhood and that's why the person is feeling anxious. But I know, for example, like my sleep gets really like it just depends really on my cycle. And I've had like a few weeks when I stopped taking my bioidentical hormones before I worked with Ashley. So before like I got my period back. Then I had a moment where I was having, I think, a lack of estrogen. And
I lost Teresa for a sec, but then she came back and finished her thought.
Okay. So I had that gap where I was, stopping the bioidentical hormones and before working with Ashley. And in that time, like I had a lack of estrogen, I think, and lack of everything, but mainly the lack of estrogen. And I was lying awake at night and my heart was racing and I was sweating and I was like, it feels like I'm anxious, but I don't even know what I'm anxious about. And this is like, it was just physical, really. I just want therapy to include that knowledge much more, that it's not only psychological, but sometimes really hormonal. And symptoms of anxiety can really just come from hormones and not childhood trauma necessarily.
Yeah. These things totally need to be looked at holistically. I absolutely agree that like therapy, psychotherapy, psychiatry, like all of it, wouldn't it be great if it holistically looked at the whole person's entire being and not just like the state of their kind of brain or their mind?
Each school looks at something different, but I'm like really passionate about having that more holistic approach. And I think like working with you guys just really added an important puzzle piece to my work as well.
That is so cool. You should do the HAP.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but I'm doing too many trainings at the same time.
Yeah, I know for sure. Oh, but I love that. Okay. Well, this was great. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story, Teresa. We appreciate you so much. I feel like though you had like slight hesitation when I emailed you in doing it. You were like, well, but this was perfect.
I'm still on my way, but I'm super happy to share my journey.
I love it. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. And we can't wait to catch up and see how everything's going and all of your surfing adventures. And oh,
yes,
I'm just so happy for you.
Cool.
Well, you have a great day, and I'll see all of you guys next week.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye. Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are. And that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the Temp Drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the Temp Drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck. This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now, and the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day, and I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural,
This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic, it's made from Australian beef, and my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.